Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Get ready to take notes, because school is now in session. Tackling the biggest issues in education, this is Education America. Save the classroom, save the country. Here are your hosts, Headmaster Rebecca Hagstrom and co-host Abigail Johnson.
Hey, teacher, leave them kids alone.
Welcome to Education America, where we are working to save the classroom so that we can save the country. Join our conversation. Education is the playing field where the battle is on for the future of our country. And as our 16th president, Abraham Lincoln, succinctly stated, the philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next. And we are here again with my wonderful co-host, Abigail Johnson.
Absolutely.
And our wonderful guest as well.
Yes, so we're here again with Christine Truyen from Minnesota Parent Alliance. And we're switching topics this evening to something that just sounds so sweet. Sounds so interesting.
Doesn't it?
Social emotional learning. Mm-hmm. So we're here. Christine is going to give us the rundown of something that, boy, it sounds so great. It sounds like something we all should learn and need to know. But there's a lot going on behind that acronym. So let's talk a little bit about that, Christine.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for having me back. This is this is going to be a busy show. There's going to be a lot to get through here. But you're absolutely right. Social emotional learning, I've said it before, is like one of the most effective marketing schemes in the history of the world. Social emotional learning sounds great. I have young kids. And I think when most people hear social emotional learning, it's like kindness, managing your emotions. Those all sound like very positive skill sets that your children should have as they go forward into adulthood. I'm here to tell you that what you hear and what you get are two different things with social emotional learning. So I think the easiest way to break this down, because again, this is one of those issues in education right now that it is such a thorny, complex issue, and we could spend 10 shows on this and not touch all the pieces. But I think the most important thing to understand is that, you know, maybe last year or the year before, critical race theory was sort of the buzzword, and everybody's very concerned. Is it in my school? What is it? What does it look like? Critical race theory is an academic theory, and that had been said a lot during that time. It's the ideology that social emotional learning is founded upon. And diversity and inclusion and equity, so, you know, DEI, I think a lot of people have those types of specialists now staffed at their schools, their administrators in their schools. That's the marketing scheme. So diversity, inclusion, equity sounds great. I want that. That sounds like a positive thing. Social emotional learning is the delivery system. So that is how they're going to get CRT into your kindergartners' hearts and minds, right? There's got to be a delivery mechanism, and social emotional learning is that. So a lot.
That's a good description, by the way.
Yeah, it's trying very to kind clear. Of like figure out, you know, which what's what here, because it is complicated. So, you know, I think just very plainly, social emotional learning at this point, what it truly is the psychological manipulation of children to adopt a radical viewpoint by undermining parental rights. And that's a pretty loaded statement.
That is,
I'm going to say it again, because I think in my studies about this and talking to experts who have dedicated very, very long nights trying to figure out what this is and what it isn't, it is the psychological manipulation of our children to adopt a radical viewpoint by undermining parental rights. So we'll tear apart kind of what that is and how they do that. But CASEL is an organization that I think every parent should become very familiar with. It is C-A-S-E-L, and that is the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning. That is the organization that provides the framework for these programs. Okay, so about 90% of the programs, the social emotional programs that your district has likely adopted, are part of the CASEL organization.
Interesting.
Okay, so that's the framework that hides critical race theory and psychologically manipulates children into believing this ideology through something that they're calling culturally responsive teaching. You may or may not have heard of that.
And that's in the new teacher licensure rules
as well. It also has the acronym CRT. So again, there's all of these words being tossed around and acronyms, and it's really important to understand the clear definition of what do we mean when we say CRT. We're talking about culturally responsive teaching. You know, culturally,
how convenient
that really,
they came up with a phrase and an acronym that matches so clearly, but has such a completely different meaning.
So there's a lot to know about CRT. But basically, and I think the most disturbing part about this is that these programs are designed to exploit the experiences and the emotions of children. Children are naturally just empathetic little people. They want to be good people, and they want praise, and they want affirmation, and they want all of those things from the grownups in their life, whether they're the teachers or the parents. And so, they seek to please in that way. And so they are in an incredibly vulnerable place to be shaped, right, with morals and values. And that is not the role of our public schools. But that is the role that they're going to play under the guise of, you know, we have this mental health crisis and these students need this support. They may not be getting it at home. So it's really hard to be the voice that stands up and starts asking questions about this, because you will be shouted down as somebody who doesn't care about the kids and their mental health. Right. But it is out of love that you start asking these questions, because you start to quickly realize that this is not the branding on the outside is not what it is on the inside.
So, quick question, and I don't know if you know the answer to this, but if I'm a parent and I'm concerned about this delivery mechanism in my child's school, can I say to the teacher, do you have social emotional learning in my child's school day? Or is it something that's tucked into every subject so that on the outside it wouldn't even look like social emotional learning?
It's a good question. You know, you certainly can and should ask it just plain in those words and see what sort of a response you get. I can say with 100% certainty that every school in the state of Minnesota has some sort of social emotional learning program. You know, and to the degree that a teacher is going to be open and transparent, you know, it's kind of depends on are you talking about a teacher? Are you talking about an activist? I always try to make that distinction, because there are so many good teachers that are there for the right reasons. They're not there to indoctrinate your children. They don't want any part of, you know, some sort of framework that's trying to embed political ideology into the classroom. But so, yes, ask the question. But I think that with respect to, like, is this existing in then other, you know, subjects, or is it really just confined to one part of the day? That will depend. I've heard, you know, kind of anecdotally from parents with young elementary school kids that it might look like, hey, we have this 20 to 30 minute carve out time for social emotional learning.
That's
and they've
wondered.
Adopted this program and they're going to really focus in on that during that particular time. However, you know, a lot of the educators who are, I hate to use the term, like, drinking the Kool-Aid, but the ones that really buy into this, feel that it is their duty, because again, they are really looking at this as, like, this is our opportunity to really be the agents of social change that these programs seek to have them play that role, that we're going to embed it everywhere. So one example that I hear, and I think this helps understand culturally responsive teaching, is that, you know, students, the goal of socially responsive teaching is they believe that students have to develop a broader socio-political consciousness that allows them to critique the cultural norms, values, and institutions that produce social inequities. That's a lot for an elementary school kid, right?
I know.
So what they're saying is, and this is what it looks like at the elementary level, kids want to tell you about their weekend, right? So it's like, okay, what did you do? We went to an amusement park. Okay, so they're going to start teasing out, you know, oh, how did you get there? And, like, you know, tell me more about that. And as soon as somebody in the classroom is going to make a comment like, oh, we, you know, we can't go because we couldn't afford to go, or something like that, that really, you know, turns on a little bit of, like, an entry point to, oh, well, there's an inequity here that we should explore. That is their opportunity then. That's an inroad to have a conversation about race and class. And so teachers who are trained in this method, and most of our teachers are now, because you have to go to these trainings. It's it's required by the district, or you're heavily encouraged to.
And now it's going to be required at the licensure level.
Right. So, you know, I think that is something to be aware of, is if you have an activist teacher who really wants to kind of go down these roads with your kids,
they will go down.
They can find it in math, and they can find it in science, and they can find a million different places where they
can
start.
So let's play off a little bit on what Christine said. So, you know, she's talking about things like, even if you as a parent are very involved, you're looking, you know, you're helping your child with homework, you're asking them about their day, you are chatting with the teacher about the curriculum. Things like this won't show up in curriculum, and I think it's important to point out to parents. So what Christine is talking about is, you know, let's talk about a math problem today. So let's do this, and it's a word problem. Mm-hmm. So if Johnny gets in the car with his sister Susie and they drive 15 miles to an amusement park, you know, what? How many miles did they go? And mm-hmm. maybe gas is $3 a gallon. Mm-hmm. Students, how many, you know, how much did they spend on gas that day? Mm-hmm. Well, a teacher can take that any number of ways. One of the ways is, how many of you have been to an amusement park mm-hmm. before? Mm-hmm. Maybe 10 kids in the class raise their hand, but 5 do not. So mm-hmm. then they're talking about, well, how do you all feel who have not been to an amusement park? So then all of a sudden, the people that do go to an have been, they feel bad mm-hmm. because they're good little kids and they mm-hmm. want to include their friends. Mm-hmm. And then they spend the rest of the time discussing, well, how do you feel about that? Mm-hmm. What, you know, boy, some of you have never gotten to go. Maybe it's because mom has a serious health condition and, oh, that's a terrible thing. Is she getting the health care that she needs? Mm-hmm. Maybe some of you don't have the funds to go. That's a terrible thing as well. That's not going to show up if you request curriculum. And teachers who believe in this and they believe that they're doing a social good, this is not going to show up. And they can take something as innocuous as Johnny and Susie are driving mm-hmm. 20 miles. So it looks like a math problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, and often 100%. Then it's tied to the color of their skin. You know, it's the beginnings of, you know, if you're white, you're an oppressor. And, you know, feeding that into little kids, as you said, little kids are caring individuals by and large. And they don't want to be seen as something bad. Neither do adults for that matter. Right. Right? So anyway. All right, Christine, go ahead. Yeah. I know you have so much more to share.
And I think the other thing, and you just sort of touched on it, is that this is putting teachers in a position to provide some unlicensed therapy here to students.
Yes.
You start going down these roads. I had a parent call me and say, hey, our second grader is in this class where they're doing a social emotional learning program and they have this carve out time and they bring up topics like death. Talk about that. And they start teasing out, like, does anyone have any examples of when you've experienced that? You get some really disturbing, dark, and very personal things coming out of second graders that teacher is not equipped to deal with or handle, or, you know, and then that goes out into the playground. I mean, you can't even just confine it then to that 30-minute time spot because then it's out. And those kids, you know, their brains are thinking about that all day and they're sharing things. And so that is kind of where I think this takes a really disturbing turn. Mm-hmm. And I think that the other thing to remember about social emotional learning is this is what's called a trauma-informed practice that requires every child to be placed in a mental health intervention, okay? Mm-hmm. So they're assuming that every child has been the victim of trauma just by, like, being in the world,
just
right?
Living.
Like, so this system requires school counselors to work as social justice advocates who shift the school culture, you know, to emphasize racism, gender ideology, sexual preference. And it's a systemic change that is disguised by this innocuous language mm-hmm. of, like, we have a welcoming and safe school. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, what does mm-hmm. that really mean?
What does that mean? Who's defining safe?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
mm-hmm.
parents, we really do. We need to be thinking about this. And I get this. You know, Christine has young kids. I have young kids. You're emptying the dishwasher. I always use that experience because guess what? I am always emptying the dishwasher. That thing is,
or filling it
or refilling it and then running it again. But think about that for just 1 minute, what Christine said. The teacher of second graders is saying, hey guys, we're going to talk about death mm-hmm. today. Mm-hmm. That is not appropriate at school.
Right? Mm-hmm.
That is not an appropriate setting. It is not appropriate to have young, what is it? 7-year-olds. Mm-hmm. I don't want an adult talking to a 7-year-old about deeply personal topics with a bunch of other 7-year-olds. Mm-hmm. If we want to talk about safe, that is not a safe thing. Parents, pay attention to who is speaking into your kid's life. Mm-hmm. Make sure that you know them. Make sure that you understand what's going on with those conversations.
Mm-hmm. And set up your boundaries. We had a back to school letter that we tried to draft to encourage parents to either use ours as a template or make their own, to just spell it out and just say, hey, and in a very friendly way, I know there's a lot of controversial things happening in education right now. Here are my concerns. These are where my boundaries are. Okay. If you're going to talk about A, B, or C issues that I don't want my kids mm-hmm. talking about with you, tell her or him what mm-hmm. they are in mm-hmm. advance. Mm-hmm. So they've got a heads up that this is crossing a line and I need you to let me know before you have these conversations. Because what we find out is that as they're teasing out these issues, we had some parents in Edina learn that their first graders spend an entire week talking about transgendered sexuality because one student on a Monday was talking about a soccer player. And they were, you know, asking some questions about, I think it was Megan Rapinoe, saying, oh, like she has some like male traits or qualities about, you know, her appearance. And the teacher was like, there's the inroad. And she utilized those questions to create a whole then lesson. And we talked about this. And then so she sent a letter to parents on a Friday to recap, you know, this the week or whatever. This is what we learned this week. Doing. Just so you know, we talked all about this all
week. She was actually proud of this.
And she said it was such a beautiful thing. And it was so amazing. And they had such interesting questions. And I really enjoyed doing this with your students. And it's like, no. I mean, that I think is something we need to be aware of too, is that you don't want to hear this after the fact.
Yeah.
You want to get in front of it. So have those conversations with the teacher right away. Mm-hmm. And then I think the other thing to remember too is that part of the social justice is like a slip. But you know, part of these things are the surveys, right? They need to continually exercise, execute these surveys. And sometimes they'll call them screeners or questionnaires. To continually ask students things like, you know, how safe do you feel at school? How welcome? How able are you to do your assignment? I mean, a variety of different things constantly. And they're collecting that data and they're going to utilize that data and manipulate that data to justify spending more money on social emotional learning. Yes. It is a never ending cycle. Yes. So that's something to always have your radar up to. Let them know that they do not have your permission to continually be asking your children a million different questions, right? Mm-hmm. That is not helping them learn academically at all.
Isn't there some Minnesota state statute saying that schools must inform parents about a survey beforehand?
Yes. And also, and I want to point this out, is that you can opt your kids out of this. And I think you should be clear and not even just formulaic by, you know, using an opt out form, but just let them know, hey, if you're going to, because what they do is they get around it by saying, well, you've opted out of surveys, but this is just a questionnaire. It is continually a game of semantics and wordplay all the time. But just be very clear about what you're talking about. But there is an opt out form. So, you know, you can exercise your legal right to opt your students out of surveys. And you can go to our website, minnesotaparents.org, and we can walk you through the process and give you the form that you can do that. But I would also encourage just having that conversation, putting it in writing, giving your teacher a letter. You don't have my permission to do screeners, questionnaires, any of these things that might collect data about my kid.
Well, and not only that, but I know some of the surveys are very direct
intrusive.
About sexuality.
Yes,
very intrusive is a better word. And planting seeds in young people's minds and hearts about
things they don't even know about.
And then they're going home and asking, what is this? What is that?
Here's the other thing that I think is important, too, about social emotional learning is that a lot of these, and that example that I gave about the second grade program, that came in with a grant. And so right now, because our districts are financially strapped, there are several districts in the state of Minnesota that are insolvent. You know, you look at districts like Rochester, they're $14 million in deficit.
How can this be after all of this, the money that came to them through the COVID
because it's out. That money's gone. And so it's the same with these grants. They will accept because it's very alluring to say, here's $2 million to run, you know, this sort of pilot program in your district, a social emotional pilot program. That's very alluring to districts who are in financial trouble to take that on. But guess what? When that grant money is done, your district is on the hook. So be very careful about that. I think, you know, our districts right now are very vulnerable to these predatory programs, I think, coming in and you know, enticing them to say, hey, let's try this pilot program, you know, under the guise of you have a student mental health crisis we have to solve. This is the magic bullet. Like, we're giving you this easy solution, social emotional learning. Who could possibly say no to that? And again, if you say no to it, it's like you don't care about the kids. Don't fall for that. And I think there are a lot of organizations that are doing good work around informing on this issue. I'm going to make a plug for Courage as a Habit. It's a website you can go to where they have distilled, again, this very complex issue down into like 1 to 5 page PDFs with talking points of like, what is this? What isn't it? All the different different aspects of, you know, social emotional learning. The School Counselors Association issues are, it's huge. Mm-hmm. So I would use courage as a habit, as a starting point. If you're just starting to explore these issues, it's fantastic. And we link to some of that on our website as well. Mm-hmm. I know Moms for Liberty put out a social emotional learning sort of guide and toolkit. Okay. So there are groups, you know, not just ours, but others that are really trying to simplify this because I think and really try to decode the language for parents that are really trying to figure out what
that
is at the root
of
this.
That is the key. Yes. Decoding, you know, I have said this for years that the left, and I mean the hard left, is so good at taking language and twisting it ever so slightly, but then bringing about a completely different meaning, you know, such as anti-racist, you know, and but social emotional learning is another one of those examples. And and this is where I think it is really confusing to parents. They hear that these things are happening in their kids' schools, but they're reading their teacher's newsletter every week. They're maybe going to, you know, meetings now and then, and they're just not seeing evidence of it. And they think it can't really be there. It can't be true. Must not be my district. And like you're saying, social emotional learning is in every district. This example you gave was in a first grade class.
Second, I think
you said, second grade class in Edina. And, you know, you shared examples on the show last week from virtually every school district around the Twin Cities. It, you know, parents, you need to be aware that this really is there. Whether
Make
you
no
see
mistake.
It or not, you need to do your research and
rural
more.
Minnesota, I'm talking to you. I can't tell you how many times we're getting, you know, emails from parents that are living in towns that don't have a stoplight. And all of a sudden they're like, we have to accommodate, you know, this demographic that we actually don't think even exists in our district. And where is this coming from? Right. Is often the question. And this is where it's coming from. So definitely that. And then, you know, I wanted to touch also on the restorative justice thing, because we have a timely thing here in the Twin Cities area, in St. Paul Public Schools. There was a tragedy that happened at Harding High School that, in my view, was potentially preventable.
Yes,
and you look at other tragedies that have happened nationally, like Parkland. It's preventable. And these restorative justice practices that are tethered to the social emotional learning programs are doing a disservice to our children's safety and the teacher's safety. And it took a tragedy at Harding for our local Pioneer Press to start covering this issue. And they've had teachers now speaking up saying, we knew this was going to happen. Yeah. Those are the quotes in the Pioneer Press article. Everyone saw this coming. We could have predicted it because we have stopped you know, the discipline policies that we have in place to keep children safe, you know, out of this sort of, you know, social justice, you know, counselors, not cops type initiatives. Our students aren't safe and they're also not successful. I mean, you're looking at academic achievement plummeting. And it's like the time that is being spent on these social emotional learning programs in school, aren't these children better served to have teachers helping them learn how to read?
Yes, is really
the question at the
end of the day. And I just again, to clarify for our listeners, the restorative justice programs are programs that were often brought in by consultants. I know St. Paul Public Schools had the PEB or the PEL, not the PELB. Pacific Education Group, PEG, come in and really change the way they disciplined. And this has actually been going on in St. Paul Public Schools for a long time. That same group was hired by many other districts around the Twin Cities. So this restorative justice is taking away disciplinary measures that we would consider, you know, as maybe older individuals to be traditional discipline, right? If a student is talking back to a teacher, they should be disciplined, right? If a student gets up and walks out of class, they should be disciplined. If a student gets in a fight in the hallway and harms another individual, they should be disciplined. But with the restorative justice practices, those disciplinary measures are not being taken. Simple things like talking back to a teacher that should be so simple to shut down is not being shut down in the name of restorative justice.
And again, social emotional learning, this is at the root. And I think that the reporting practices, too, have been totally eliminated in some districts of the incident reporting that has to happen.
Well, that's because the Minnesota Department of Human Rights threatened every school district across the state of Minnesota, saying if you don't have an equal number of suspensions or what have you, disciplinary measures between whites and Asians and other kids, then we will actually sue you. They threatened lawsuits.
You know, and they've done workshops and trainings. Yeah. I spoke with an administrator in a metro area school district face to face saying, are you telling me that you are changing the way that you report incidents based on race? And she said, yes, we've realized that we're racist in our reporting. And I was astounded to hear her say this just flatly like that. And I said, I don't want to be in this room a year from now when a tragedy has occurred and have everybody say, we all knew it. This was the kid that there were tons of red flags that were not documented along the way.
And this was a conversation you had?
This was a conversation that I had.
In what? Do you mind sharing what district?
No, it was Osseo. And they had a community safety meeting and they talked about their emergency preparedness and they had the police officers there and the SROs. Mm-hmm. And they found out that parents were going to show up to talk about not just like the worst case scenario. Like I think everybody thinks about this in context of like a school, you know, active shooter drill.
Right.
Mm-hmm. No, this is like what parents wanted to talk about was not just that, but the day-to-day violence that's happening. What happened at Harding was day-to-day violence. I was a kid with a knife in the hallway. So I think that what we're trying to highlight here is that, you know, the most fair, equitable, safe thing to do for our kids of color is to keep them safe,
yes,
right?
And
so the child at Harding was a child of color who could have been, I think, you know, there were many opportunities along the way to avoid that. That was a predictable outcome of these really terrible policies.
Well, and I am, you know, to your point, I've shared this on our show before, Abigail, but when I do teacher interviews, teachers coming from other public school settings have shared with me how frustrating it is that they spend so much of their time just dealing with students who are not behaving, and they can't discipline them the way they used to be able to do. And the fact that these hands of these teachers are tied is frustrating for them. It's frustrating to the students who want to learn.
Absolutely.
And again, this is not limited to St. Paul, Minneapolis schools. This is a new philosophy that is permeating every school district across America. This isn't even just a Minnesota thing. And until parents really stand up, like you say, Christine, the power is with the parents.
Yes. Yes. Right? And teachers. Lock arms with the teachers.
Yes.
Absolutely. They are a powerful voice right now that needs to come forward and really speak their experience.
Are there teachers groups involved with your organization?
You know, we have teachers that come to our organization and a lot of times say anonymously, I would like to share this story, because they obviously are fearful of, you know, retaliation for their job. But I am noticing a trend that teachers are becoming more emboldened, probably because they have one foot out the door and they know they're going to quit anyway if things don't change. So that's kind of their, you know, last hope is to expose some of this and hope that there will be, you know, school board members and administrators with the appetite to hear what they're saying and actually affect some change. It is a really, you know, hard thing to have this whole conversation. It's like kind of doom and gloom. But I do want to continue to point to the fact that, you know, parents do still have some levers of control in their students' lives. And I think it's going to take courageous parents, you know, getting educated. Educate yourself on, you know, what SEL is, what it isn't. What do these words mean? How do people that are using them intend them to mean? Pay attention to what's going on at the legislature right now. I know it's depressing to watch, but there are a lot of bills that are being advanced that relate to social emotional learning, ethnic studies. I mean, these are all things that will probably, some of them, take away some local control that our school boards still do retain to select curriculum, and your right as a parent to select curriculum.
Yeah.
So stay involved and stay informed and awaken others. You know, create a community. I feel like this is concentric circles where obviously, you know, you get your own four walls of your house right first, and then you go out into your community and you talk to kids, you know, parents at soccer games, and then you go out to your school board and your school administrators, and then you go to your state. So it's kind of, you know, do what you can within the sphere of spheres of control that you do have.
That is such good advice to leave us on to, Christine, is that you don't have to solve all the problem at once, right? You just have to start with your own self and the people in your influence circles, and then take it from there, right? That is the important thing to remember, and don't be overwhelmed.
Eat the elephant one bite at a time.
Yeah. Yes. And turn off your phone, turn off your TV, and start researching this, right? It's easy to sit and scroll Facebook for 45 minutes or an hour. Spend that time reading up instead and learning about these things.
Yes. Your children are worth it. Do it.
Yeah, they get one chance at an education, right?
No
do-overs. That's why we're here, right, Abigail?
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Christine, thank you so much for these last couple of weeks. We so appreciate all the work that you're doing. And Abigail, as always, we love doing shows together.
Absolutely.
And thank you to our listeners. And we hope that you'll listen to this podcast at SaveTheClassroom.com and join us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Good night.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.